Welcome in, everyone, to The Deep Dive. We're diving into a pretty fascinating area of law today. Specifically, Louisiana property law. And we're going to do that through a particular case.
Okay.
Martin v. Brister. So this is kind of like, I guess, a masterclass, if you will.
Yeah.
In how, like, one very specific case can actually kind of illuminate a whole bunch of broader legal principles.
Right.
That you might encounter. So we'll kind of use this case, Martin v. Brister. And again, the focus is going to be on how, you know, there's this general rule. And this is especially true with something as big as buying or selling a piece of property. The rule is you got to have a written contract.
Right.
But we're going to be looking at, you know, an exception, a really fascinating exception to that rule.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, you know, it's really interesting because you're right. Our legal system is very much based on formality.
Yeah.
And particularly when we're dealing with what Louisiana law calls immovable property. So land, buildings, that sort of thing. There's a real expectation that that will be documented.
Right.
But in the Martin v. Brister case, it shows us what can happen when maybe you don't dot all your I's and cross all your T's.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's really what makes it, I think, a good case for us to look at today.
Yeah, it is. So let's sort of, you know, lay the groundwork here with just the facts.
Okay.
So this whole thing began back in 1997. And what we had this guy, John Brister. He sold 2 acres of land in Wynn Parish, Louisiana.
Okay.
He sold it to this couple, Tommy and Brenda Martin. And the price tag was $75,600.
Yeah.
So they put down some money. They got a mortgage. Pretty standard kind of real estate transaction, right?
Yeah, pretty standard.
Except there was a little wrinkle, right?
There was.
The initial deed that Brister gave to the Martins, it had like the wrong property description in it.
Right.
Like, so not exactly what they thought they were buying. So that's a little complication number one. And then it gets even more interesting.
It does.
So the Martins, they also wanted this like extra 40-foot strip of land. It was kind of right next to the 2 acres that they had bought.
Okay.
And they wanted to use this for a driveway. So they claimed that they had a verbal agreement with Brister to buy this strip of land for $6,000.
Okay.
Now, Brister, he didn't deny that they had discussed it, but he did dispute that, like, the $6,000 figure was, like, the actual agreed-upon price. So a little bit of he said, she said going on already.
Right from the get-go.
Yeah, right from the start. So the Martins, you know, they end up paying Brister a total of $76,466.67. Now, this wasn't just for the remainder of the mortgage on that original 2 acres. It explicitly included the $6,000 that they believe was, you know, the price for that 40-foot strip, plus like a little bit of interest on top of that. So the money changed hands.
Right.
But then things get a little sticky. What happened next?
Well, so even though Brister received this full payment, he didn't actually give the Martins a corrected deed that included the 40-foot strip. And he also didn't cancel the original mortgage.
Interesting.
So now we have this kind of, you know, this gap, essentially.
Yeah.
The money has changed hands, but the paperwork hasn't been updated to reflect that.
Gotcha. So what did the Martins do?
Well, the Martins, I mean, you know, they'd made this payment.
Right.
They thought they had this deal, so they went ahead and they built their driveway.
Oh.
On that 40-foot strip.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, they took possession of the land and they started using it in a very obvious way.
So they're acting as if it's, you know, it's their property.
Exactly. Yeah. They're operating under the assumption that this deal is done.
Right.
And then a little while later, Brister sends them a corrected deed.
Okay.
But the 40-foot strip is not included in this deed.
Oh, no.
And at this point, the Martins are like, wait a minute.
Right.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
And so they end up filing a lawsuit. And I think the really surprising thing here is that the trial court actually sided with the Martins.
Oh, real?
They said, yeah, you know, you guys have a legitimate claim to this property.
Interesting.
But I think that takes us to the real heart of the matter that we want to unpack today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, we have this principle in Louisiana law, like you said earlier, that says you got to have a written contract to sell immovable property. So how is it that the Martins win this case when they only had a verbal agreement?
Yeah, that's the real head scratcher here. So what are the big like legal issues that the court was looking at?
Well, the big one is whether a verbal agreement for the sale of property in Louisiana can be legally binding. I mean, we know the general rule is that you have to have something in writing. But this case shows us that there are exceptions.
Yeah.
And the key to this particular exception is this thing called Louisiana Civil Code Article 1839.
So Article 1839, this is like the magic bullet?
Well, it's not magic, but it is a very specific, narrow exception.
Okay.
And basically it says that a verbal sale, a verbal transfer of immovable property is valid, but only between the parties involved and only if two conditions are met.
Okay. What are those two conditions?
Okay. So condition number one is what they call actual delivery of the property.
Okay.
And condition number two is that the seller has to actually acknowledge that they made the transfer. And they have to do that under oath.
Okay. So like in a courtroom under oath.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's dig into those two conditions a little bit. With the actual delivery, I mean, like the Martins built a driveway on that land. So that seems like pretty clear evidence that they were in possession of it. Right.
Right, yeah, absolutely. That goes way beyond just setting foot on the property. I mean, they built something, they were using it.
Right.
It was a very clear act of ownership.
Yeah, it wasn't just like they were, you know, having a picnic on the land one afternoon or something.
Yep. No, they were treating it like it was theirs.
Right, right. So that actual delivery box seems pretty checked. Now, what about that second condition, the seller acknowledging the transfer under oath?
Okay, so this is where Brister's own words come back to bite him a little bit.
Oh, okay. How so?
So during the trial, when he was questioned under oath, Brister actually said, quote, "I sold Tommy 40 feet. He just never did pay me for it."
Oh, wow.
So he's acknowledging the sale right there in court under oath.
Yeah. Even though he was saying he didn't get paid, he was still admitting that he did the deal.
Exactly. He's disputing the payment, but he's not disputing that there was a sale.
So even without a written contract, like a formal contract.
Right.
The fact that the Martins took possession of the land, they built that driveway, and Brister himself, he admitted to the sale in court. That was enough to make that verbal agreement like legally solid.
Yeah, it was enough to make it enforceable.
Wow. So basically, under Louisiana law, sometimes actions speak louder than, or at least as loud as words, on a written contract.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting here is that it shows that the law is sometimes willing to be a little bit flexible, you know? It recognizes that not every situation is going to fit neatly into these, like, rigid boxes.
Right.
You know, the purpose of Article 1839 is to prevent fraud.
Okay.
And I think the logic is that if the buyer is clearly using the property and the seller admits under oath that there was a sale, then there's probably not any fraud going on.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, maybe it is a duck.
Exactly.
So this case, you know, it started in trial court, but then it went to the appellate court, right?
It did.
So what was their role in all of this?
So the appellate court's job was to see if the trial court made any mistakes.
Okay.
And specifically, they were looking for what they call manifest error.
Manifest error. What is that?
So it basically means like a really obvious mistake, like a decision that just doesn't make sense based on the evidence.
Gotcha.
And in the Martin v. Brister case, the appellate court, they looked at all the evidence, you know, the driveway, the testimony, and they said, nope. We don't see any manifest error here. The trial court got it right.
Interesting. So they upheld the original decision.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, for any law students who are listening to this,
what
are like the big takeaways from Martin v. Brister?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that even though the general rule in Louisiana is that you need a written contract to sell land, there are exceptions.
Right, right.
And Article 1839 is like the poster child for that.
Yeah.
But the thing to remember is that those exceptions, they're very specific. You
right.
have to meet like all of the requirements.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Martin v. Brister case, it really highlights how important those requirements are.
Okay, so you're saying like, don't just assume that every verbal land sale is going to be okay in Louisiana.
Yep. No, definitely not. I mean, this case is an interesting exception, but it shouldn't be taken as a green light to go around making verbal agreements about property.
Right, right.
You always want to get things in writing.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about the actual delivery part, you know, building the driveway. But what about that second part?
Right.
Like, what if Brister hadn't admitted to the sale in court? What if he had just, like, denied the whole thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think in that situation, the outcome would have been very different.
Okay.
Because even though the Martins had the driveway, they wouldn't have had that sworn testimony from Brister.
Gotcha. So both of those elements, they have to be there for the exception to apply.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't just have one or the other.
Okay. And for those of you who are like interested in the litigation side of law, this case also shows how much def
It basically means that the appellate court is going to trust the trial court's judgment unless there's a really good reason not to.
Yeah, makes sense.
And the reason for that is that the trial court, they're the ones who actually hear all the evidence.
Right.
They see the witnesses, they get a feel for the case in a way that the appellate court doesn't.
Right, they're kind of in the trenches, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this case, it's not just about, the specifics of Article 1839.
Right.
It actually tells us something bigger about Louisiana law in general.
It does.
And that's that sometimes your actions, like what you do and what you say under oath, that can sometimes carry more weight
Yeah.
than a written document.
Absolutely. It really emphasizes the importance of being careful about what you say and do, especially in a legal context.
Yeah.
Because even if you don't put something in writing, your actions and your words can still come back to haunt you.
Right. And I guess it's especially true when we're talking about something as big as buying and selling land.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think this case really makes you think about the policy behind this exception.
Okay.
You know, why does Article 1839 even exist? What's the point of having this rule that seems to contradict the usual requirement for a written contract?
Yeah, that's a good question. What do you think?
Well, I think it might be about fairness, you
Yeah.
know? Like if one party makes a promise and the other party relies on that promise and acts on it wouldn't be fair to let the first party just back out of the deal
Right.
just because they didn't put it in writing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's like the law is trying to balance the need for formality with the need to protect people who might get taken advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we wrap this up, what's like the practical advice for all the aspiring lawyers out there?
All right, so the practical advice is this. Always, always get it in writing.
Yeah.
When it comes to real estate, don't mess around with verbal agreements.
Right.
Martin v. Brister, it's an interesting case, and it's good to know about these exceptions, but that doesn't mean you should rely on them.
Yeah.
A written contract is always going to be your best protection.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really important point to end on.
It is.
It's easy to get caught up in the theoretical side of law, but ultimately we're trying to help people navigate real world situations.
Right.
And in the real world, when it comes to property, you got to have that paper trail.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, on that note, I think we'll wrap it up here. It's fascinating to think about how much a case like this, it can really make you question the assumptions we have about the law,
Well, yeah, it really does.
And I think it's a good reminder that the law is always evolving,
Absolutely.
and that there are always these little wrinkles and exceptions that can pop up.
Right.
So, yeah, thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.